Bon fête. Happy birthday. I'd like to read to you the message from the Sri Aurobindo Ashram. It is simple. From the hand of the mother. He has come to bid the earth to prepare for its luminous future. We were going to talk tonight about the dawning light. It's a recurrent theme in Indian spiritual literature, and it makes pivotal appearances in Sri Aurobindo's epic poem Savitri as well. The poem opens with the figure of dawn, the symbol dawn, and the poem closes with a dawn, promising much. Because when the dawn comes, it breaks through the field of ignorance, of darkness. And suddenly, everything that was potential becomes manifest. We speak of manifestation. Sri Aurobindo preferred that term to creation, because always being is full of potentiality, but we don't see it until it becomes clear. To make something manifest means to make it clear. So the rising sun means that consciousness has been attuned such that a field that was previously unseeable to us is now visible. So Sri Aurobindo and the great mystic poets of India, in the Vedas and the Upanishads, are not speaking simply about the daily diurnal rotation, dawn leading to the zenith of noon, back to dusk, and then to night, and then back again to another dawn, but to a psychological dawn, where we become aware, we become conscious. The Veda speaks of the eternal succession of dawns, but also suggests that there is a permanent dawn. Again, it isn't something that happens in astronomical observation. It's something that occurs within us, where we rise to a level of consciousness, where our view of self and world changes. What has changed in us? That we grow from the darkness to the light. That we leave the experience of death behind in the discovery of immortality. Tells us that much that is hidden of our own nature has to be brought forward and made manifest. As we grow, we slough off the scales of darkness. We grow in that same sinuous way, which is painful. We take a motion this way, we turn that way, we turn again this way, and it seems not to be directive. If you're lost in the moment, you don't perceive the direction, the unerring direction in which that sinuous motion is taking you. You're perturbed. You think, there is no hope. Or you're exuberant and you say, Everything's great. I'm about to arrive. And yet, the sinuosity of that path continues. The diurnal rotation of dawn after dawn after dawn continues. But though the dawn comes, you're blanketed by night again. So what is it that is steady in all of this? Is there something essential to your being? And this is where the idea of light comes in, because the Upanishad says in a way that reverberates in our own experience that there is only that reality. Than that, there is no other. What is that? No name suffices. Every name has application and is replaced by every other name that you can think of. But that being remains. It is omnipresent. Everywhere at once. Nowhere at once. It is an infinite. It is the very essence of being. But to say that it exists is to say that something stands out from that unnameable thing. Our very word for that existence means to stand upon. So what is that ground of unknowability, of undefinability, indeterminate, beneath that which exists? We say Sat-Chit-Ananda, but Sat-Chit-Ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss, is an extension of that into positive terms. Yes, it is true to say that all is the play of Sat-Chit-Ananda is true, but it does not exhaust what that is, because what is unknowable exceeds even that. It transcends, it is free even of the positive definition of being. But if we can say that it is, if we give ourselves that license, and we say that not only is it, but it is conscious of itself, and not only is it an infinite being, conscious of itself, a conscious being, but its experience of its infinite self is one of uninterrupted, unendurable delight. Only that could experience that. But we can also say that as that figures itself, consciousness is not mere awareness. Consciousness has instinct within it, power, force, shakti, tapas, and can intentionally invest itself. And that manifestation that we speak of is that investment. But it's not static. It's not just a form. The Upanishad says, if truth has a form, it is light. So this manifestation has truth in it, because it comes from true being, from sat. So it is satya. It has truth. So even when it seems to diverge from its own supreme nature and become the opposite of itself and plunge into darkness, we have to be aware that there is a secret light there and a purpose in it, because nothing accidental can happen in that. One being which is undivided. All division must ultimately be wrongly seen. Division is not division, it is differentiation. And invested in the cosmos and in each being in the cosmos is this secret light. So when we speak about a dawning, it is the emergence of that light within us. a rediscovery of what we are. Because we work through the folds of our nature. We rise up with a body and live and begin to blink and think. But there is something behind, something unnameable, ungraspable, which vivifies the life force, which installs the body, which wakes up the mind. Who is that being that sees, that experiences through all of that? Who is that drop of delight, that point of bliss behind the heart? Who is that honey in the heart? That is that adventuring spark that was thrown out by that great light at the prompting of the manifestation. That call to the adventure of consciousness and joy that Sri Aurobindo writes about in the first pages of Savitri. The symbol dawn. That is what is on the quest. To capture the light. Not that it is lost, but it's playing hide and seek in nature and each other. So what do we do? As we come to some awareness, as we feel stirred to inquire, to live from this honey in the heart, means to be fundamentally content. You can't be fundamentally content if you're driven by desires, if you're driven by a mind which changes its topic of interest every 15 seconds. But you can live from the santosha if you have a continuing experience, if you have that flash of insight. So how to get that flash of insight? Well, the very fact that one has an aspiration is an indication that the hour is coming, that auspicious moment where the dawn occurs, where the sun rises in you, is on the way. You begin to stir before the night is over. You wake from your dreams. You sit in meditation, and the sun comes up. And in your life, too, you begin to wake from the dreams that beset you, the neuroses that confront you, and that soul stuff, if I may, begins to assert itself, begins to arrange for the mind and the heart the circumstances that will permit it to step out from behind the veil, to part the curtain and stand forward and view through the nature of this cosmos, calming the mind, bringing it illumination, lifting the heart, inspiring it, ennobling the body, making it capable. We need practical steps forward from that moment of awakening to really secure it, to integrate it in ourselves. And so we don't, following that moment of awakening, race away, but we engage in the world. And as light has been invested in us, we invest our light in this, building harmony, building from a simple foundation a marvelous edifice in our own lives, and then aiding our partners, helping, but always teasing forth consciousness, inspiring the sense of adventure in another, helping them with their load, but not so much that we rob them of their own powers of discovery. Sri Aurobindo had a wonderful phrase, help men, he said, but do not pauperize them of their energy. Don't turn them into paupers by doing so much for them, because you need to do good. You need to be a good partner, but you don't need to do the work for them. You have to know what to say and when to say it. You can't be afraid of saying a difficult truth. And there will be moments when you're a student, and there will be moments when you're a teacher. And when you're a teacher has sometimes to do a difficult work and to do surgery, and surgery hurts. But the patient recovers and gets better and goes on. If you have to help them overcome something, then sometimes your assistance may be benign, and sometimes it may be severe. Mother said, I have thousands of children here in the ashram. I love them all. I have a handful of disciples. With them, I can be tough. If they're battle-hardened, then I can work with them, and they move speedily forward in transformation. Well, transformation is our goal, but to get to transformation, we first have to find out what we are. And getting there, having that flash of insight, leads to a settling of realization. And that realization, maturing, enables us to begin to, if I can use this term now, lean into nature, take that soul force and apply it to the mind, to the heart, to the sinews of the body, and begin to reshape it and to plug back into society. We prepare a ground this way. The transformation, that transformation where the permanent dawn comes, begins when the realization is full and settled. Before then, what we're doing is preparing the nature. The preparation is itself a yoga. Gosh, just to find the psyche inside, that's a yoga. But then to prepare the nature, that's a vaster yoga. And then to step onto the path of transformation, a still greater yoga. But we have had an opportunity to watch those who've proceeded in front of us, so we can see an example here and there as to how this transformation can occur. No one has completely transformed the body. That is the secret for the future. But we can take meaningful, powerful steps towards that. Changing the nature. Finding that which is immortal in us, which is full of light, this secret light, must become manifest, must become clear. The ananda that comes with that is what sustains us then in the difficulty of the change, because all of nature, in a sense, comes with us when we go through that transformation. You can't leave anything out, because you are part of the whole constitution of this world. If you're going to change yourself, you are changing the world at the very moment that you change yourself. It's true. So, you can only go so far as the world permits you. We are working phase after phase, stage after stage, experience after experience, in the getting of it, in the assimilation of it, towards that great moment where we can breach the divide and make darkness and light one, make spirit and matter one. The gulf between can be erased. We can experience oneness and harmony, not simply in our inner being, not simply in our awareness. Divided from and bereft of all others, it is an empty victory. But with all others, that same light shining from every face, now that is a colossal victory. That is something that is cosmic. So I think we're here to practice a yoga which is cosmic, and not just which aims at our individual liberation. That will come. Yes, if you want that individual liberation, you will get it. You adhere to your aspiration, you will get it. You will have that moment. Once you know what you are, it doesn't go away. You won't lose it. Even if a cloud comes and the old nature reasserts itself and things look bleak, it's a passing cloud, and the next breeze will blow it away, and you'll find that you are that refulgent self, that awareness, sheer and absolute always. You're not simply this silent self. You have all the dynamism of the divine. You have that unconquerable being, power, delight in you, all that. And it doesn't even begin to describe what you are, because even beyond that are mysteries of your own nature that cannot be told, that cannot be made manifest. This universe and we in it are symbolic of that. We do not exhaust it. But isn't it great to be here and to know that we can recover something of ourselves, find that divinity, awaken that dawn to come out of our apparent darkness and ignorance, and offer it back, saying, look at this secret that I found that you left here. May I offer it to you? So, on Sri Aurobindo's birthday, I think we have to humbly state our gratitude to him and to his radiant collaborator, the mother, because together they made it so clear that the age of religions is over. We cannot belong to Hinduism or Christianity, whatever the name of the ism that we have learnt from, we have now to overpass it. All of those paths have a truth in them, and we must find it and assimilate it and step beyond it. Because all of those perspectives have come from that which contains all perspectives. So without seeing an enemy anywhere, we should go forward. Everyone is our guru, but no teaching can suffice, because all teaching ultimately comes from within. That source is not out there, but inside. Once we find it inside, we hear that same voice, find that same leadership everywhere. Happy birthday to us. The 15th of August. It is now 144 years ago since he took birth. That's 12 dozen. I never tire of saying that the number 12 represents perfection, fullness. And so 12 multiplied by itself, fullness multiplied by fullness. That is full. This is full. Purnam madha, purnam idam. Wherever we place our consciousness, wherever we place our foot, that transcendence is there. And we find Sri Aurobindo waiting for us. So, let us go for our meditation. I salute you. Jai Ma Namaste.